6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am your host, Anna Forsyth, at aforsyth03 on the Twitters. As you can tell, Chris is not here. He is on IR, unfortunately, again. On again, off again, kind of like Travis Dermott, Tucker Pullman, probably shouldn't be on the ice, so, yeah, unfortunately he is not here, but a more than able replacement, we have Patrick Johnson of The Province, Rising Action on the Twitter. PJ, how you doing?
I am good. I thought Chris was on a vacation. I was like, it's spring break? Figure it was something like that.
Yeah, no,
he's actually
nothing as glamorous as that, unfortunately.
All right, get well, Chris.
Yeah, he is down low, but yeah.
Right, get well,
want to
Chris.
Jump on Twitter or Discord to say get well. Yeah, I could make a joke here, like, but I honestly feel so bad for him. He's had a rough go of things recently, so yeah. Hope you're okay, Chris. Yeah, PJ's like, I'm sure our listeners know, but like one of our oldest friends on the show, and I'm not referring to his age, but kind of referring to his age too. But like, I think you have been on, like, even in the Chris and Clay days you were on, hey?
Yeah, Chris and Clay. Usually not Clay. I think I usually would show up because Clay wasn't there. So it was Chris and Matt. And
we
do it at the old NW Studios. Yeah, way back when.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that was just before my time. Like, yeah. I was in the NW Studios still, but, like, then we got kicked out. And then we're in the hot box, and then COVID happened. So, yeah, here we are.
Yeah.
But yeah, we haven't been on in a while, so, like, just to, like, catch us up, how have you found covering the team this season? Just because, like, starting out, you know, new management, like, all this fresh hope.
Yeah.
Bruce's first full season, we got this, and then we are here now. Is that kind of, you expected that, or?
I mean, I was one of many who was like, well, this team has to make playoffs.
I mean, yeah, we always joke about us being the positive playoffs podcast because the team is set up that way, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I wrote this on Saturday. You know, first of all, you kind of think about what if they change the coach? I think the coach has something to do with it. I think it is a personnel. It is largely a personnel story right now. I mean, you look at the beginning of the season, they struggled so much to break the puck out. You know, the amount of time they spent in their own end, you know, chasing around after their own mistakes. And they're not in the same spot. Like, you know, that's the difference. I've talked to, you know, a couple people about this, and they're all like, you know, you look at the personnel and you look at even though there's three AHL call-ups, like Brisebois, Willannon, and Juleson even, have all done a better job. And Burrows, who I think we knew from off the top, have all done a better job, like, finding breakouts. And the timing's better. I mean, I think there's a few details. Like, you know, Rick Tocchet mentioned it the other day. Like, he thinks the players are actually talking better, like just making more noise. And if anybody's ever played on a team, most people are not attuned to make noise. I am a person that is attuned to make noise when I'm playing whatever sport I'm in.
I'm a shouter.
You know, you need to, you know, anyway. And it's, you know, it was kind of interesting to hear that that's a challenge even for professional players.
Yeah.
But I would say, bottom line, the goaltending was, like, Thatcher Demko was terrible in the first half. You know, he obviously was playing in a difficult environment, perhaps worse than even last year. But he wasn't doing anything. Like, the guy we've seen since he's come back was never there in the fall. And, you know, it's interesting. He's talked a little bit about just how he had to sort of reset himself mentally. For whatever reason, I don't think his sort of mental game was there in the fall, which is surprising for a guy who's taken it so seriously in his whole life. So, you know, I think they get some better goaltending. I mean, they're still like having to they're still playing fire wagon hockey, but you know, they didn't have a single win that a goalie stole for them in the first half. And people like to blame Spencer Martin and Colin Delia, but like they weren't there to be the guy. You know?
No, not at all.
So to say it was a goaltending problem, I mean, yeah, it was a goaltending problem as much as Thatcher Demko like didn't do anything. But in the end, the team just didn't play well enough in front of the goalies. And, you know, to be a playoff team, they needed to kill penalties better, and they didn't do that. And they, you know, they, yeah, so are we where I thought we'd be? I don't think so. I mean, I did wonder about the loss of Brad Shaw, for instance. You know, and Trent Call obviously wasn't up to snuff because they let him go. And Mike Yeo, I mean, I guess lately he's been doing better with PK. Like, PK has been a little bit better. But even under Tocchet, it's only running at, like, 74%. So
that's
not very good.
That's not good.
No. So, yeah, I would say, you know, it's... I as far as covering the team goes, I mean, it was starting to get, you're like, oh my God. I mean, even when we, you know, even before the All-Star break, like, it was over. There was 40 games to go. And you're like, how am I supposed to do this?
Bleak.
It was bleak.
Yeah.
And then they changed the coach. You know, Bruce was great. Really enjoyed Bruce, but we'd run out of questions for Bruce, you know?
Yeah.
I showed up in Pittsburgh, you know, 2 months ago on the road, the last road trip I was on. Post media is not sending reporters on the road anywhere. But the last road trip I was on, we show up in Pittsburgh. It's Bruce's birthday. And I was the only reporter to show up to practice because it was, you know, I went to Winnipeg and I went then to Pittsburgh. Getting to Pittsburgh from Vancouver is tricky. I said, the hell, let's go to Winnipeg. We got to stop somewhere. Getting from Winnipeg to Pittsburgh was hard. But I got there and I got to show up there in time for practice. And I was the only reporter. And, you know, the way it goes on the road is, you know, sometimes you usually Murph's at every practice. And some, you know, Shorty and Cheech usually can come and watch practice. And sometimes they don't have to scrub because they can just basically go in Bruce's office. Like Cheech was old friends with Bruce. He could just walk in his office, ask him any question he wanted. So his insights, I mean, you know, so the insights are always a little more, you know, a little more, his nuances are a little more perhaps. I mean, they were old friends, and it was a little, I don't even know what the word would be, insight, with even more insight. Like, you get to know a guy a little bit just back and forth and this kind of thing. And especially like once we stopped recording, every once in a while, they have these little chats. And this is one of those days. And I kind of said, happy birthday, Bruce. And he goes, oh, I don't know if there's much happiness around here. And it was sad. You just felt bad for him.
Yeah.
And I said, Bruce, you know, listen, we're not going to scrub today. And we had a little chat. We chatted about stuff, and there was nothing, you know, I said it was off the record, so there's nothing there. But I will say there was nothing that was, like, particularly shocking, you know, nothing like, oh, my God, this guy hates, you know, there was never anything like that. But it was just, you know, it was just sort of, you know, it was no different than anything we really ever had on the record, which was, like, we're out of answers, you know, like, And that was a guy that at that point, you know, was 2 months into thinking, or almost 2 months into thinking he was going to be let go. So we had a coaching change, and at least there's that, and trying to see if there's anything different. I mean, obviously coaches talk, it's how you deploy things, and there is a bit of a difference, at least. But I mean, whether that's the players or any more than anything, you know, I think you're fair to wonder. So at least from that standpoint, there's still things to talk about. And, you know, they did make a bunch of trades, even if not everyone was made total sense.
Yeah.
So it's never boring.
So you've demoralized us in the first section. So great job. I feel depressed.
I can build you back up.
Okay. You know what? Let's take a super quick break and we'll just dive back into the last week in Rewind. So Canucks just had super bonkers schedule and then just even more, like, bonkers than usual. Yeah. Like, back for one game, on the road again.
Yeah.
Like,
thank you for mentioning that, because that was one of the weirdest, like, nobody understood that one. Like, it was just, like, nobody was actually... I think just nobody looked at the schedule and was like, wait, what?
We talk about it all the time, because, like, Canucks have a lot of road trips that don't make sense over the years. It's often, like, they go to the Midwest, and then they go to the South, and then they go to the Northeast, and then back, like... That's always happened, but I don't know if it's happened as much that it's been, like, back out again.
Years ago, it was when Brian Burke was on with Hockey Night in Canada. he detailed a. In fact, I'm trying to think when this might have been my first season on the road. Anyway, he detailed a road trip that literally never happened about the Canucks. And I was just like, that's really weird. Why would you just not use one of the ones that does exist? He tried to claim there was a trip where they went all the way to Columbus, like came home and then went to DC. And I'm like, that didn't happen. But what did happen was that, yes, they were in St. Louis, came home to face the Bruins and then went to Dallas, which was bizarre.
Honestly, they did better against Boston than I suspected under any circumstances. Never mind that one, but yeah.
But I mean, just to throw it way back, I mean, the opening season trip was a trip. I mean, the Canucks usually have a couple five gamers, and they usually have a six gamer because that's just how it goes. But, you know, generally what you want is not much. But once you get out there, not much movement. And I would say that trip that we took, I mean, there was a lot of games. That trip that we took, that I was on, that I was talking about, was, you know, Winnipeg. Vancouver to Winnipeg's not that long, really. Winnipeg to Pittsburgh, if you're flying a charter, is not that long. And then once you're in Eastern time zone, like Pittsburgh to Tampa is like an hour and a half. You know, Tampa obviously over to Fort Lauderdale is nothing. Fort Lauderdale up to Raleigh is nothing. Then the flight home was a long one, but you get an extra day anyway. So it's, you know, I mean, it works out.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, honestly, other than that weird one, like, they haven't had any weird trips this year. But
not been too bad.
No.
I mean, pull me up if I'm wrong here, but I kind of, like, lost any hope that the Canucks had any swing with the league when they couldn't start their 50th season at home. Like, they're naming a new captain. And they're just like, everyone knows for over a year that it's Bo Horvat.
I don't think there was another two weeks. Yeah, I'm trying to remember if there was an actual reason for that. And I don't remember. I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah, Canucks are pathetic. I think that's probably just the reason. That's fine. Anyway, back on the rails. Like, the Canucks got three wins in a row at home this week. Four wins in a row total. But major question, how do we get them to stop doing that? Like, I guess stop playing terrible teams is maybe the first answer. But
yeah, I mean, I thought the Senators were going to put up more of a fight than they did, because the Senators were playing well. Like, there was not any denying this, and they looked they weren't even there for most of the game. So, yeah, I mean, obviously a game in Dallas is going to be tough, but yeah, game against Dallas is going to be tough. You know, on the road trip, it's two or three games that are, it's not, I mean, Arizona has been playing better, but you're still like, I think the Canucks, I mean, like, in the end, like, this is the other thing, and this all ties into the whole big picture story, like, the Canucks, as they're currently constructed, I mean, the way Pettersson's playing, the way Hughes is playing, the way Demko's playing, like, this is not a bad team. Like, this is a team that's going to, you know, they just beat the Leafs, right? Like, they did actually reasonably. I mean, the Bruins, I wrote the Bruins game, I think the Bruins were in second gear the whole game, so I have a hard time evaluating that one.
But, they were tied.
But, I mean, they played pretty well against the Wild. But, you know, they got some tough ones coming up here. Like, the Kings, I mean, the Kings in L.A. is always tough. And the Kings, I mean, we'll see. They seem to have rounded into sort of be the team they are. So, I think, you know, that'll be a tough one. Back-to-back, I mean, Anaheim's awful. But it's back-to-back. It's never easy. They come home, VGK. Yeah. They go, you know, come home, VGK, San Jose. I'm just looking at how things are going. Like, you know, there's some difficult games. They play the Blackhawks twice. I mean, it's funny, they're in St. Louis, and the Blues, my buddy's a Blues fan, he's just like, man, they're doing the same thing as the Canucks, they keep winning. So that's gonna be a weird one. Like, I don't know what the incentives are there. But you close the year with the Ducks and the Coyotes. Like, there's a good, you know, they're gonna run out the year with a, you know, good chance of finishing pretty good, like, last, you know, what do we got, 18 games or whatever it is. Pretty good record in that last stretch. So I don't know. What do you need to do? Well, I'm not. I think because you don't want to. You shouldn't be cheering for anybody getting hurt, is what I'm saying.
No.
So that you're stuck.
No, exactly. I mean, yeah, when you build up a team that's kind of constructed on, like, being almost dependent on these superstars like Pedersen, like Hughes, like...
Yeah.
I mean, even Miller of late, like... Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're trying extra hard to prove that they don't hate each other, but they're, like, constantly hugging on the ice. Their special team works is really good together. But, yeah.
Well,
it is
funny. And this is something that I've said... You know, more than one place. Like, when you're not winning, everything is terrible. And when you are winning, you put up with more. And, I mean,
yeah.
I would say, you know, and I've written it a few times now, but like, I had the thing with Miller last week where he mentioned, I went back and listened. I was like, wait, he referenced the game in Calgary when he got ripped because he didn't back check. And I, you know, he actually wasn't great in the last sort of 2 weeks of the Boudreaux era, last 3 weeks of the Boudreaux era. But once Tocchet arrived, like, the numbers were way better. And I think a lot of that is because they're breaking the puck out better. It's not just, like, we look at it. But, like, Cam Charon, who's been tracking these things all season, he's like, they're carrying the puck out better. You know, you talk to people who actually watch, like, who know how to watch the game. You know, from sort of a tactical level, and they're like, no, they're doing a better job. Like, you can see, or you see less of the issues they've been having before in terms of moving the puck.
Yeah,
and that makes a difference. And
yeah,
so you know, Miller's playing well. Their main guys are playing well, and they're getting, you know, like Dakota Joshua's playing with a lot of confidence. I mean, he's a guy that. To be effective, you know, he's been this most of the season. He's a guy who he plays in straight lines. He gets on the puck. He's a big, big, strong dude who knows that if he can get into a space, he's not going to be pushed out of that space. And if he can get on into someone else's space, they're going to have a hard time navigating with him in it. So, you know, a guy like that's playing well. Sheldon Dreis is a great story. He's got 10 goals now. You know, I think has gotten better as the season's gone along as he's found a bit more of a more kind of nuanced role. Like, he's not a guy that can play heavy minutes, but he is a guy that can help you if you manage him right. You know what I mean? The classic story of the quality that you can actually find and sort of, you know, there's like 50 really good guys in the NHL, and then there's like 800 guys that are good enough to fill out the rest of the spots in varying degrees of quality. So, you know, you've got 100-something guys in the AHL who are good enough to do it. And Dreis is a guy that seems to make it work. So, you know, I mean, there's things happening. And I mentioned all the call-ups. Like, you know, I mean, it actually kind of amazes me watching. Like, I watched Christian Wallinen very closely. And, you know, he's not a perfect. Mm. He makes bad reads at times. He makes some poor decisions on it. But, like, he does so many other things really well that I'm like, why did they waste time with Riley Stillman? Like, what? I mean, they saw an opportunity to flip him. They did turn him into a prospect, so okay, that's good. But it just was such a strange process in the end. They had to get out from under Dickinson, so they picked up a contract back, and they played a bunch out of him. They played him a bunch. I mean, it was funny. Like, he was less terrible in the last while, but like, he didn't do anything and he couldn't break the puck out, and Wallinen can. And you're like, so if you really were trying to win, why were you doing this? I don't know. It's been a very weird year.
I think, like, you've hit on like a few things there that kind of come under this one umbrella. Like, Chris and I talk about Jags all the time, just a guy like, there's a few Jags on the bottom of this roster, but, like, they're finally being, like, first of all, you got to pay them like Jags, like, not be paying them, like, millions a year, and you got to play them like Jags. Like, you can't be depending on Riley Stillman to, like, prop up these minutes, and, like, as you say, Dakota Joshua in that more limited role, Sheldon Dreis, like, not playing a ton of minutes, and, like, as a more limited offensive producer, like, he has a role. I'm, like, a huge Sheldon Dreis fan, so...
Good guy.
Like, because... Yeah. Well, I watch a lot of AHL, so, like, Sheldon last year, both the Sheldons were really fun to watch. But, like, even I was just saying in the first half of the season, like, this is not, like, how he looks good, right? So, yeah, I think he's kind of just a fun player to watch because he has a real nose for the puck and just, like, squirrels his way into finding it.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. But, yeah, like, you can't ask him to be anything more than a fourth-line player because
no, that ain't it. But that's fine. I, you know, it's... oh, I had something. You said something I was going to say. I was going to comment on it.
AHL?
No, no, it was before that. It doesn't matter. It was something you said in passing that I thought about. I was like, oh, that'd be a good thing to pick up on. But carry on.
It's all good. Yeah, and like we can stop talking about the Jags at the bottom of the
roster. it was that. Sorry, it was guys. It was actually funny. We had quite an interesting debate about definition of, well, not just of a similar term. He's a guy. And
yeah.
And I would say that Drance and I were like, oh, he's a guy. Like, yeah, you can play him. He's fine. Wagner thinks a guy needs to be someone that you're like, okay, he's in the lineup and he's playing on the third line or he's the second line. And it was interesting because I think your Jag is closer to what Drance and I think of, which is a guy like, you can put him in the lineup. You'll be fine. Like, he can play in your fourth line.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, he's not dragging behind. I would say Will Lockwood was in the end not a guy. Like, he just couldn't, he didn't have enough there. We're now going to find out if Vitali Krasov is at least a guy, you know?
Which I think remains to be seen still.
Yeah. Whereas Wagner would say Brock Besser's, I mean, he's a guy. Even if he's not scoring enough, he's still a guy, you know? Like,
that's funny.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, don't agree with Wagner. He's placing it too high.
I mean, I rarely do agree with Wags about anything, especially humor. But, like, poor Wags. He's a good dude.
He's a good man. He's a good man. And thorough.
Yeah, I think our friends on the PP1 podcast used to have a segment, don't know if they still do, called, like, Guys and Dudes.
Okay.
And, like, and I'm pretty sure guys were, like, kind of, like... your version, my version of it,
yeah.
Like, yeah, he's a guy, but he, like, the dudes were the guys you could depend on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And speaking of dudes, like, the dudiest of dudes must be Andrei Kuzmenko this season. Like, like, the most fun on and off the ice. Like,
yeah.
How are you looking at that bet that the Canucks have made on him with his new contract? Are you looking at any differently than when they signed it, or still?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be very interesting to watch next year because, like, the question is, do you believe he's a 25% shooter? He's never been a 20, even the KHL he wasn't. The difference is his case he made to me and Wags, essentially, and Wags wrote a very good piece about it, is that coaches have always told him to shoot more. And he's actually shooting more. And look what's happening. So, you know, and on, I think the goalies have said that he has one of the, like, he has, like, the heaviest shot in practice. They're like, oh, like, there's a lot in it. But you think about the goals he scores, they're in tight, like, the goal score goals, they're in tight.
Yeah.
Their tips.
Yeah.
Like, he's got the most tip goals in NHL. And there's some skill to that. Like, the comparison I've been making with the Canucks and point shots and tips, because they've been really good at this year, is, you know, you'll appreciate this. This is a soccer analogy. Simeone, when he was at Atletico Madrid, decided, he looked around and said, no one else is doing set pieces. Nobody cares about set pieces. Nobody thinks about set pieces. I am going to make the set pieces a weapon. I think we can do this. And just trained and trained and trained and trained. And to the point where Atletico Madrid had this incredible set piece because nobody knew how to defend it because nobody ever bothered practicing it because everyone thought it was a luck of the draw thing. And so they were really good at it. And a couple of years later, your Vancouver Whitecaps were doing exactly that. And when I figured this out, I put this to Carl Robinson, and Carl was just like, he was just like, figured me out, goddammit. But, you know, I mean, I think of the Canucks with point shots and tips, they've made it work in such a way that it is an effective weapon, and it's a real outlier kind of thing. I think teams will come to adapt to it. I mean, I had a great chat with Bo Horvat before he left about it last fall. You know, and basically one of the things he, you know, it's an Adam Oates thing. Essentially, Adam had taught or given him ideas on how to find space when you're deflecting. And, you know, traditionally the guy would go to the front and stand in front of the net. Well, the guy that goes in front of the net, in Horvat's vision, pushes out. And it has to do with how defensemen defend now. They're not going to follow you off the crease, basically. And so you create separation. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Kuzmenko, you look at Anthony Beauvillier, since he's come in, you know, those guys they're operating in the sort of middle of the slot, and there's no one. So they actually have time to actually manipulate their stick and actually track the shot in. So I think there's something to that, but whether it, you know, can be repeated is another question. So, you know, I mean, he's strong, he's bull, he knows how to use his size, he gets in tight, he has this great ability to finish. But I would say, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at. But I am kind of in the camp that, like, you need guys. Like, at the end of the day, you need players. So, you know, I totally understood the argument that really they should have flipped him. And if they had flipped him, I would have said that's the right move. But I also have a hard time. One of the things that has really frustrated me, and I wrote a little bit about this at the time, was that, you know, we ended up in this scenario where that it's even a discussion. Like, it shouldn't be. That's what you should be upset about, actually, is not that they didn't trade him, is that we even were in that spot to have a discussion. Because at the end of the day, he's a fun player. He does fun things. And the team overall should be moving in direction to, like, optimize that. And that's where we're at.
Honestly, Kuzmenko should be the biggest win for the Canucks. Like, that should be, like, home run win. Like, they charmed him when he was, like, because they didn't take him to Joey's, like Edmonton did. Like, he picked Vancouver. He's thrived here maybe better than he has, like, anywhere else. Yeah. Like, and he signed a new contract, and he loves it, and he's fun. But just because of how far behind the Canucks are, that's, like, that's when you start to question it, so... you're right, it's unfortunate, but
I mean, yeah, and that's the thing. And
they made their bed, right?
Yeah, you know, I would say, like, it is part of the, you know, as I noted, like, or when, as I said in my tweet, like, after the Roenick trade, like, I just had a lot of confused people, like, what are they doing? Because everything in the week before that had been, this team is clearly going to be like, well, we're just going to juice our draft this year. And we're not going to worry. You know, we've got enough pieces here and there. We're just going to kind of see what we can do. And the Roenick trade clearly is them saying we need to be a playoff team next year, which, you know, I think, hear me out, deserves some credit. But, yeah, at the end of the day, moving out a first-round pick in a way, you know, for a guy, you're like, oh, okay, he's good. But, like, you know, you were so high on this first-round pick. So, like...
Yeah.
You know, was this a deal you had to make right now? Like, the price is a lot higher right now than it would be after the season or in the summer or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, in the end, Alvin's like, well, we didn't think he was going to be available. And I guess, did they not think there were going to be any other guys of a similar quality available? I mean, okay, that's half the game is trying to figure out who's around and what's happening. And sometimes you'd strike, but, like, I think in the end, Steve Yzerman, I think, has been documented, like, saw an opportunity. I don't quite get what he's doing in Detroit, but so they've ended up with a good player, but the price is like,
official.
So, but I was just going to, let me get back to the playoff thing. I said, I made the reference about them pushing for the playoffs. I mean, one of the things I think I've been thinking a lot about is the work that the Leafs and the Lightning have put in, right? Like, think how good those teams are. And one of them's not going to get out of the first round. And so there's an element of thinking where you're like, ooh, like, that's a lot of work for nothing. Like, getting in the playoffs is hard. And then, of course, the playoffs themselves are hard. And, you know, so there is a cynical way of thinking about it. Well, in the end, playing playoff games is enough. And that's not what fans want to hear. And I think fans should rightly expect more. But at a certain level, I can appreciate the idea of being like, well, playoff hockey's pretty fun. we got in the playoffs. That's pretty good. But, you know, I mean, if it were any other owner, I could maybe. But, you know, in the end, we've just seen too often that that's, you know, the approach. There's so much baggage still around. You know, you look at Huyel, you look at Myers, mm-hmm. look at how the number of people that have left the organization, you know, otherwise. There's been, you know, it's just.
Yeah, it's messy.
It's just messy. And so you're like, come on. You know, go full in, go the ambitious route. Like, if you'd held that first round, you'd be able to pick two guys this year. Here's the quiz question I throw into everyone, Anna. Do you know how many players drafted in the top 20 in the 2020 draft have not yet played in the NHL? 2020 is the season. That's the draft that essentially is unaffected by COVID because all those kids had a season.
Right. No, I'm just trying to remember.
2 seasons ago.
Watching it online.
How many of those kids have not made the NHL of the top 20?
I don't know.
Two.
I'm going to.
And they're both Russian.
Yeah.
So, like, oof. What are we even talking
about? I was going to say.
What are we even talking about here? It takes you know, your top 10 guys, they're playing in the NHL by the time they're 19. Like, Pettersson, Hughes were both in the NHL when they were 19. And you're, you know, guys 10 to 20, takes them 2 years. So, like, you could have picked a defenseman and a forward, and you already have them in the lineup in 2024. So, like, that's the thing that I can't look past with the Roenick deal. Like, he's going to be good. He's going to be something really good next year. But you're like, we're doing this again?
I mean, you're 100% right. But, like, let's look at, like, what the Canucks are doing. Like, Miller's 30. Like, they can't wait 2 years. Like, it's stupid, but, like, they can't wait 2 years to start building something.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is the sort of counter argument, isn't it? Right? Like,
yeah.
So
they got to hunt for 25-year-olds and,
you know, so now it's like, okay, 22-year-olds and, you know, Pettersson and Hughes, who are essentially in their prime next year, with their goalie, hopefully playing really well, a still not old, too old JT Miller and, you know, Roenick essentially in his prime and, you know, Kuzmenko, having a great offensive season, you know, maybe one of the Russian kids, one of the other Russian kids takes a step forward. You know, there's sort of, okay, all of a sudden you're like, you know, I'm sure that's where they're at. They're like, hey,
that's a great we'll sound be a to sum
pretty
up.
Good team, but you're like, well, what about the rest of your division? But
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, it's Pacific. It's fine. Yeah, I think that's, like, honestly a fair thing. But, like, I guess what we have to do is just wait and see because the Canucks haven't left us another option that, like...
I mean,
yeah.
The tough thing in the end is, you know, what is it? There's still people cheering, right? Like, this is the thing, I get it. And it's sort of that it's the only game in town. And certainly ownership banks on that. But the fact that they're selling tickets for $29, $39, I mean... The thing that was kind of amazing, I didn't realize this. I had a friend who was there a couple, like last week, and he goes up, you know, you can get twin sales on tap. Nice beer. You get that juice. Mm. He got a large, big one. It's $25.
Yeah.
And he's just like, and I sat there and I thought about it and I said, you know what? In the old days, you'd buy two beers. That's the price of two beers, but you're only getting one now. And that's what they're kind of banking on. They're just like, well, he's not coming back, but at least he bought the equivalent of two beers. And also, we still have a bunch of beer to sell next game.
Yeah, like, it is actually quite shocking. Like, the beer prices, like, have increased significantly on last season. Yeah. It's probably a difference of about, like, almost $5. Yeah. So it is
huge. So they're trying to recoup their costs because they're basically, it's the lost leader to get you in the door, and they're just like, well, maybe we can make some money selling you some stuff. But I just don't think people are buying two beers. They're paying $50 for two beers. I just don't think that's happening.
No, and I don't think, like, I think it'll wear thin. Like, this town, like it's not Toronto. People will stop. Yeah.
I think it already has. There are issues. Like, I know I talked to, I heard from a season ticket holder who his company had a box and they were actually thinking about giving it up. Not necessarily, not just because the team hasn't been playing great,
yeah.
but because there's just not as people working downtown. So, like, yeah. there's fewer people that's to entertain, fewer of their staff want to use it, fewer clients want to go because everyone wants to go home. Because that's the other thing. It's not just COVID. People live in Langley or whatever. Like, because yeah. of the cost of living,
the spread,
people have
yeah.
spread out more. So it's just the business has fundamentally shifted. And you know, I mean, the NHL still is a very gate-driven league. And one of the things with
yeah.
the Canucks, obviously, was, you know, they've done very well with filling their building for a very long time, but they haven't filled their building in, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And there hasn't been pent up demand to get season tickets the way there used to be. So, you know, that part of it all has shifted, and I'm just kind of going, you know, like at some point, you know, are they going to be able to, at some point it's just, is that going to run out? I don't know if it's soon, but I certainly know it's not as easy as it used to be. And I don't think, you know, in the end people are not the whole point of all this, any of this, is to create, you know, sort of stickiness, right? Sticky fans. You want them to stick, you know, diehards. And I have no idea how to gauge how many diehards there are anymore, because, you know, there's still obviously people buying season tickets, but when I did the last Boudreaux game and I went outside and talked to a couple of fans on the street, and I asked one of them, you know, I asked one guy, what do you think? And he goes, oh, it's terrible. I mean, everybody agreed it was terrible. And he was like, I can't keep supporting this. I'm giving up my season tickets. And the other guy basically was like, what else am I going to do? There's nothing to do.
Yeah.
And so I think they're banking on those people, but there's, you know, those people are going to be fewer and fewer. And
yeah. And I think the thing is, like, if the product's not there on the ice, and, like, tickets are still expensive, at least in the first order, maybe they're reducing them. But, like, and merchandise is crazy expensive, like, and the, like, beers are expensive, whatever. And I do think they're doing a better job in in-game entertainment than they used to, but, like, I mean, Crazy Pete's a problem, but that aside, like, I do think their community engagement is better, and I do think their in-game entertainment is slightly better, but, like, and Rogers is a mess. Like, it's not a nice building. Like, so, you know, something's got to give at some stage, right? Like,
yeah. Like, the roof leaks and the ice, you know, the ice making system needs to be replaced. Yeah. And
talking of sticky, the seats.
Forget about like, the seats. Yeah, without giving the seats, you know, like,
yeah.
It's an old building. It needs work. And,
yeah.
Yeah. It's just, you know.
I feel like we went up and now we're down again.
So, is it time for a break?
So that's okay. It's time for another break, I think. And then I think when we come back, we've kind of gone to the distant future and maybe we'll go to the near future the break.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So we did a bit of looking out towards the end of the season, the off season, near the top. But, like, overall, what do you think Canucks need to see? Like, what do we need to see from the Canucks in the end of the season? And I suspect there's two answers, like, from, like, a sort of media fan perspective and, like, what do you think the, like, management are looking at in the last, 15 games here?
Well, I mean, they obviously want to see, they're taking stock of guys like Phil DiGiuseppe. I mean, DiGiuseppe, they've cut, you know, obviously signed a 2-year deal. He's a veteran guy. He's a guy they really value what he was able to bring in Abbotsford. As a few people pointed out, adding a 2nd-year deal is going to probably make him unlikely to be, or 2nd-year on his deal makes it unlikely that he'd be claimed on waivers.
Yeah.
similar with Brisebois, although I think there is a secondary element to the Brisebois deal, which is that, you know, they're basically saying, hey, maybe you're a number seven guy two seasons from now in the NHL. And,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, he's been here long enough.
You know, so they're doing bits like that. You know, they're taking a look at, you know, what does Christian Wolanin look like in the way we want to play in with this coach? You know, he's played enough NHL games that we have a pretty good sense of what he's at. You know, can he be this number six guy? You know, what do we make of a guy? What do we make of Noel Juulsen? What do we make of, you know, in the end, what do we make of Kyle Burrows? You know, there's sort of those kinds of questions. There's how do these kids shake up? Does Kravtsov have anything? You know, I think they talk a lot about you know, guys like Ratu and what have you, guys like that who, you know, Studnicka, you know, they want to see what they're like. They give them a summer to add some strength, sort of elements like that, you know, can they put anything more on? Is that going to make it, you know, sort of a marginal difference? They talk about 2%, you know, 2% gains and things like that.
Yeah.
So they're certainly looking at trying to understand, what is in these players. Is there a little bit more they can find from these guys? And
what about the goalie situation? What do you
think? I said this last week on Sakaris and Price. My gut, and I don't have any reason to think this, but I think my gut is that Demko will be the guy. I think they probably go with, say, Seelovs. And then, you know, I mean, there's an outside chance, I suppose, that they keep Delia and make him the backup. But I think what you do is you run with Martin as your kind of Richard Bachman type out in Abbotsford. You know, he's your number three. You bring him in because you need some veteran experience.
I think Seelovs, it's hard because Seelovs just like had such a rough time with development. Like, this is really his first year, like, given everything that, like, this is his first year as the guy in Utica and, in Abbotsford. Wow, that was a throwback.
Yeah.
He's done really well considering they've had, like, you know, since Demko went down, like, no backup in Abbotsford. Mm-hmm. Like ECHL guys coming in and out who have not performed that great. I think he's just still so early in his development.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's, we'll see. The other option is when Adelia or Martin backs up again.
And you keep letting depend him play. On Demko being the guy again.
I mean, at the end of the day, Demko, that's what the bet is.
I guess that's been the bet from the start. Like, once you, like, sign OEL, once you sign Myers, like, you're betting on Demko.
You know, I don't know how seriously they really talked about it. I mean, I think that everything was on the table. I think they were willing to consider any and all trades. I don't know really how aggressive they were talking about Demko, though. Because, you know, in the end, he's, you know, we've seen what he is. He means if he plays, he's a lot. And as far as I know, I mean, he's always said, I think he likes it. And I think he likes it here. I mean, there is a lot of sort of stuff behind the scenes that have frustrated players here and there.
Of course.
But on the whole, they get to live living in Vancouver. It's a pretty nice setting. You know, look at a guy like Demko. It's pretty close to home.
Yeah. And, like, it's a tough market, but you've got a market that pays attention. Yeah. Like.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of on that Pedersen vibe, like, we've kind of seen him step up with Hughes kind of in that leadership role. Like, previously I've been an advocate of not really giving him that overwhelming responsibility, but he does seem to be like if he wants it badly, like, give him the captaincy, I guess. But, like, I don't know how much stock you put in that, like, formal role of, like, being a captain right. or not. I think Wags and I discussed this earlier on in the season, but yeah, like, is that something you think is important to Pedersen?
I mean, I think bottom line for him, he wants to win. I don't know if he's necessarily an instinctual captain. He certainly is a guy that, you know, sets the tone.
Yeah.
And I think sets the tone in a way you really want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, in a way, you know, Marcus Naslund, I don't think, I mean, it was funny. I was listening to the Rintoul podcast about all this. And I don't, they picked Marcus Naslund to be the captain. I'm not sure going, I was trying to remember before whether we ever really talked about him as a captain type. I don't think people instinctually thought had him on their list or very high up their list. But in the end, he became a tone setter, a professionalism sort of setter. You know, and he talked a lot about just the way you carry yourself. And that, you know, he is one of the many guys who tries to speak truth to what they felt Marc Messier brought here. I mean, obviously it's not something the fans want to hear. Fair enough. But he was in that, and he wasn't a rah-rah guy, but he was in how you carry yourself at the rink, how you bring yourself to the rink, what you do, how you play, whether you speak truthfully. You know, and people ripped him for saying they choked, but he was speaking how he felt, you know, and I think in a weird way that helped him connect better with certainly the fans. You know, but at the end of the day, he's still also like, you know, in that last game, that last Trevor Linden game, like the focus was not as much on Naslund as it should have been because, you know, like obviously Linden was the sort of long-held sort of community hero, whatever, but like Marcus Naslund had a way better career. And, you know, he was the best player in the world at one point as a Vancouver Canuck. And Trevor Linden was never even close to that. So, you know, his last game was, you know, it wasn't great how that all ended. Mm-hmm. But that perhaps spoke a little bit to the kind of sort of assumption, I guess is the word, or the sort of people really just got used to being there. So maybe there's something for Pedersen that way. I mean, obviously things have changed. Although how much have they changed? I mean, the media market, I mean, how media people consume their media is different, but people still pay attention, you know? So could he be a captain who, you know, Naslund was always there. I was talking to a couple of people about this back because this question's come up before. And I said, you know, what was Naslund? No, Naslund was always there. You know, he was a guy that, and that was something that the city, you know, Henrik picked up on is you are there after every loss. You wear that.
Yeah.
And Petey hates, I mean, they all hate losing, but Petey hates losing. And we've had him after some losses and he's just like, he does it because he has to. He gets asked for. But he does, you know, in the end, he doesn't, you know, I get it a lot. In those kinds of situations, you want to do there. But those guys were like, no, we got to be there to answer questions, especially the bad ones. And, so, you know, I don't think it's one of those ones that will make or break whether he chooses to stay in the long run. I think if he gets asked to do it, I think certainly he'll be like, yeah, sure, let's go for it. And there are a lot of examples where the best player on the team has simply been picked as the captain and, you know, the rest of the kind of team manages to organize itself and carries on. So, I think, you know, I think realistically that's kind of the window he's in. He doesn't have to be the guy. I don't think it makes a difference if he is or isn't.
It's just interesting because I think I probably changed my mind on whether you think he should or could or wants to be it.
Yeah.
Over the years, like, I've definitely been an advocate of less players shouldn't be captain. But, like, sometimes you're just the guy. Like, Connor McDavid, like, is the guy in Edmonton, so... And he's boring as hell, so that's maybe... like, a good thing for a captain to be.
Yeah.
Pedersen's not boring, but, like, you know, he's reserved in some ways, and,
Yeah.
Just has that kind of European ways.
Yeah.
looking into the offseason again, like, Canucks signed kind of long-awaited free agent Aiden McDonough today. They seem to be, like, pretty active in the free agent market. Like, is that just, like, inevitable and part of their 20 to 25-year-old, like, hunt that they're going on?
Well, I mean, I, that in that case is coincidental. I mean, they I think they would have preferred to, they would have obviously preferred to sign him last year. But as Ryan Johnson has made it very clear, they weren't going to pressure him to give up a final year of college or finish what he felt he had to finish. I mean, in the end, he's a kid that certainly has a great shot, great power play weapon. Mm-hmm. Needs to learn how to skate. Like, it's kind of where
it's
at. Yeah,
I mean, yeah. And that's, like, the case of a few players the Canucks have signed recently. But, you know, like, you can teach players how to skate. Like, that is a thing that can be improved upon.
Yeah.
Canucks have a wicked skating coach out in Abbotsford, so.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
So it is a positive.
Yeah, no, it is. Exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, Aiden McDonough is not going to be Bo Horvat, let's be clear. But Bo Horvat had a lot of questions about his skating coming in, and he got a lot better. So, it's not like it's impossible. It's
Artu Ratu's, like, again.
Yeah, same,
like,
kind of story. Where? Like, they, you know.
Yeah.
Same kind of story. I mean, Ratu, I would say this. I haven't heard the questions about ability to process the game as I've heard about Ratu. Like, people have the questions about whether he just can get it. I mean, it has
the processing speed.
Yeah, just like the game's really fast, you know. It's just and some guys in the end just don't have it, and that's every guy that ever comes into the NHL tells you how fast it is, so we'll see. But I think more than anything, McDonough's like, you know, he's certainly an interesting prospect. And it sounds like he's going to play some NHL games. We'll see. I'm not sure if he'll play right away, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes. You know?
Yeah. Do you think, like, as a tactic, that's something worth pursuing? Or, I guess, we'll see, but it's so hard to tell, like, just because they're NCAA players, like.
Oh, I mean, they're definitely in after some other guys. I mean, Faber had the list, and that was the list I'd heard. Yeah. So,
comparing that to drafting.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's an avenue that adds a certain type of player.
Right.
You know, these guys are basically who they are. You know, the fact that they get to work out as much as they do in you know, when you play in collegiate hockey, because you're only playing, you know, Friday, Saturday kind of thing.
Right.
You know, so physically they're always ready. Just the question is, can they translate the rest? And, you know, certainly, like, you know, you look at Mark Michaelis, for instance, a guy that probably deserved a little better, you know, you give him a year in the AHL, maybe, or half a season in the AHL so he can get up to speed. Instead, he started in the NHL, and it was the COVID season, everything was terrible. And, you know, in the end, he was totally ineffective. So,
yeah.
But, you know, we've talked about Troy Stetcher, we've talked about Chris Tanev. Yeah. You know, those guys, you know, Stetcher's in the lineup almost right away. Tanev needed essentially half a season. People forget, like, obviously Tanev was a special case because he'd only played 1 year of college and was, what, 20 or whatever when he signed. So, you know, he was right in that window. But, like, the thing, I mean, you go all the way back to Ryan Kesler. Like, Ryan Kesler needed a half a season of pro hockey before, you know, in the AHL, before making the transition to the NHL.
But also, I mean, Chris Tanev went down and played in the A during the half lockout, right? So him and Eddie Lack, and they were playing together every night, and I think they did improve a lot over that time, because also I think Chicago was pretty good at that.
Yeah. No, I mean, my point was, like those guys are always closer to being
a
low-end ability player on your team than anything. So... Yeah, it makes sense to chase them because they fill a role. And every once in a while, you find a diamond in the rough and you find Chris Tanev. But you shouldn't be realistically, you're not going to find Chris Tanev. But you might find Troy Stetcher. So.
Right. Yeah. And, like, regardless of the merits of the process, like, they've given away first round picks. So.
Right.
Like.
Yeah.
That's the, choice they're making. Yeah, okay. Like, last thing, and it's a prediction on just pick a number where Canucks going to finish.
Oh, in the draft?
Yeah.
Well, hold on. Give me a moment here. Let me look okay. this. I actually need the draft odds.
So, yeah. I need to actually. Because the 25th.
I need to.
Right now.
Yeah, no, I just need to look at the actual, like.
Okay.
How it shakes out right now. Because. Yeah. I just want to look at where they are. Because I haven't looked at where they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing, unfortunately, better than they were this time last week, but.
So they're currently eighth, right? Yeah, so they're most. Yeah, no. Yeah. So, because it was one of these ones when they were seventh.
Yeah, it's.
It was right. Most likely that they were actually going to be. Yeah, when they were. Yeah, sorry, that's what it was.
Yeah, because you have to look at the brackets, right? Yeah.
1, 2, 3, yep. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh, so they're, sorry, they're sitting ninth? No, counting wrong. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, they're eighth last right now. I think most likely they're going to pick. Yep. Yeah, there's a 33% chance they fall back. So
that's high. Like, it's yeah. not.
I think they're going to pick eight.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Like, this isn't, like...
Yeah. No, I know.
We're not going to hold you to this.
No, but it's one of those ones I want to actually think about it. I hadn't actually thought about it for a while.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, eight. Yeah. All right. Like, I mean, that's a decent player to be picked up this year.
No, yeah.
In eighth spot.
I mean, that was... But... Yeah, I mean...
Not a life-changing player, but...
No, I mean... Yeah, they're 8 points back at Detroit. Yeah, they're not catching Detroit. They still might fall behind Philly, but Philly's also terrible. The one I actually enjoy is Arizona. It's kind of an X factor. Like, can Arizona actually play better? But you look at the goal differential where things are shaking out. You know, maybe they have finished ahead of St. Louis. But
I do think
realistically, this is the thing, like,
it doesn't matter.
It's yeah, I mean, when they were sitting sixth last, I mean, maybe I got, that was the thing I was looking at when they were in the sixth spot,
yeah, like, and Arizona kept winning, and
yeah, but in the sixth spot there was a 50% chance they were going to fall back, right? Like, it's kind of weird odds. Like, when you're sitting fifth is kind of the worst spot to be. You're almost certainly going to fall back.
Yeah.
I don't really understand why they weight them the way they weight them, but
neither do I. I famously do not math.
Fourth is the worst place to be. Fourth, you're almost certainly going to fall back. Like, it's you're 60. You have a 62-3 chance of falling back. Like,
yeah.
Why do we do this? If you finish last, I mean, you know, I don't know. They're trying to dissuade you from tanking, but like,
yeah, and I don't know what the answer is, but like, it's not. This isn't working.
The answer is to get creative and learn from relegation battles and do things like that. Like, change the way your schedule is set up and give your team something to do over the last 20 games other than not try to win.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, like, playoffs in soccer, like the championship into the Premier League, like, such a fun way to, like...
Yeah.
Finish the season. I mean, and I think in other countries they take the top and bottom and put them into... Mix,
I'm not like, saying you necessarily need to relegate, but I think you find a way to build some incentive into the end of the season. Like, people have talked about the goal plan for years, and maybe that's it. But I think Camp Chiron had some interesting idea where basically you're like, you create I can't remember how he structured it. It was kind of, there was a tournament that is in like the last 20 games. Like, you kind of hit stop at game 62 or whatever. and then you find a way in, or game 72 in the last, you know, I don't even know. But there's got to be ways to create some kind of interest. I just think, what do I know? I think there's always the thing that you always have to remember is that in any plan built by the NHL, there's inherently a sort of mediocrity in it that, you know, how much worse?
I mean,
how much worse could it be? Okay, no, that's not too bad. You know, and then that's what they go for. It's like, oh, how much better? What's the cost benefit of doing it the way that people really want to do it? No, that's too much. What about this? Will people be kind of mediocrely? Well, how are people happy enough with this? Okay, we'll do that. You know,
the NHL like just gunning for mediocrity is just like such a good summary of
it's just
so much. What a great way to leave it. I think
we went high.
I actually
and
like
we went low. Every segment. Look at us.
It's been a roller coaster.
Chris would be proud of us.
You know, like I always got told off for being too negative. It's fine. We have fun anyway. Thanks so much for joining us, PJ. PJ's at Rising Action on the Twitters. He's still going to be putting out articles, no matter how bleak it gets. So, give him a follow.
Thanks, guys. Always a slice.
Yeah. So.
All right.
I will just take us out super quick with our admin. You can support us at support.c4podcast.com. That's where you can buy us a coffee or a pint, as we prefer to put it. Follow us on social media at the C4 Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. Come join us on Discord, Talks and Puck, discord.io/C4Podcast. Okay, Chris is back next week, fingers crossed. With all that said, we out.